Hey everybody, this is Kyle Jetzel. I'm your Driven Autism Dad. Today I've got with me Cameron Watson. Hey Cameron, how you doing?
Doing great. Hey, everybody.
So this is a touchy subject, and it's interesting how we came across this. We're going to talk today a little bit about suicide and our ASD kids and some of the things that can happen. So a couple of days ago, Cameron called me out of the blue. We're good friends. We've been good friends for, I don't know, 10 years or so, Cameron, something like that. And we just started talking. Cameron was checking in on me. I was checking out on him, as men do sometimes, you know. I guess not too many men do that. But anyway, as we got to talking, I don't know how we got on the subject. Cameron, do you remember how we got on the subject of suicide?
I don't know. I actually can't recall. We just got onto it, and it's one of those subjects that I'm kind of passionate about, and so I probably went off a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, Cameron actually jumped up on a soapbox, which is pretty interesting because Cameron is 6 foot 8. So when he
Yeah.
jumps up on a soapbox, he's like 7 feet tall. And so it matters when Cameron steps up on a soapbox, right? So let's do this. Let's just jump right into this, Cameron. And first, maybe tell us a little bit about your family so people can, and you just a little bit to kind of get a good feel for who you are.
Sure. So, my wife and I have been married for over 25 years, and we have 8 kids. We have 3 kids that have been diagnosed on the autism spectrum, with ASD, and then some other diagnoses like OCD and AC, attention deficit hyperactivity thing. I live in Ada County, and I used to do some consulting and some work for the Ada County Highway District. So anytime I go to say hyperactivity, whatever, I say ACHD, which is Ada County Highway District. So
We know what you
anyway,
mean. Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, and my oldest is in her, she turns, today's her birthday, actually.
Oh.
Happy birthday, Elizabeth. She's 24 today, and my youngest is 7 years old. And we are probably just we have enough in our family that we can relate to most families. There's very few things that happened that someone says, "Oh, this is going on," and I'm like, "Well, that's foreign," or "Oh, that's new." Typically we are like, "Oh, interesting, that kind of relates to this little chunk of life that we've experienced as well." So
Perfect. And Cameron and I, we worked together for a few years.
yeah,
And so as we worked together, Cameron smiles because we had a lot of fun.
we sure did.
But we also, you know, Cameron was a great resource for me because we, you know, as you face these challenges in your life, it's nice to have someone that you can talk to that's very unemotional about these things that can talk to you in a more strategic way. And so I know Cameron and I have had a lot of discussions about a lot of different things, marriage, our kids, raising kids, which is super important to both of us.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting when we got on this subject, and maybe I can start by, I want to set some groundwork here because many of you know my wife passed away almost 2 years ago. But prior to her passing, she used to have this saying that I thought was pretty interesting. And she would say, kids are like velociraptors, right? And Cameron has heard this. And what she meant by that, if you've ever seen the original movie Jurassic Park, you know, as they created these dinosaurs, they put these velociraptors in a pretty sophisticated cage. That cage was pretty big, pretty tall walls, and it was surrounded by electrified fences. And in the movie, they say these velociraptors are really smart. They're always trying to get out of their cage, right? They're trying to escape and take over, basically, is what the whole thing is about. And they're so smart that they're systematically testing the fences all the time, every day, all day long, to see if there's any weaknesses in the electrified fence. So, you know, my wife, in the movie, it's interesting because at one point they have to shut down the electricity for only what, maybe 2 minutes. And in those 2 minutes, because the velociraptors are checking the fences very consistently, they escape, they start killing everything, they take over the whole island, and there's a lot of, you know, screaming and yelling and running, right? But my wife has, she likes to call, she says kids are like velociraptors because they're always going to test the fences. Right now, it's not because kids are bad. It's because kids are interested in learning how to do things that work. And
And
by
see,
work, go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing I would add here is that kids are natural velociraptors. In other words, it's not something they're consciously trying to do. They're not doing it with intent of malice or anything. It's just the natural tendency of being who we are, man, and testing our boundaries to see what happens. And from when kids are little, everything goes in their mouth, right? Because they're like, what is this? And it's, do you remember the Mr. Yuck stickers
No,
from?
I don't.
So we had a huge campaign when I was in elementary school where we were given these packets of Mr. Yuck stickers, and they were ugly green and black, and they kind of smelled yucky. But if you made the mistake of licking it, oh my goodness, you would never, it was so offensive to your tongue. Anyway, and you took these home and you gave them to your parents and you said, "Hey, mom and dad, the school told us to put this on everything that's poisonous so that we don't stick it in our mouths." And we're in elementary school. We should have known by this point not to stick things in our mouths, but they still sent us home with these stickers so that if you would accidentally lick it or purposely lick it, you would know that, oh, that is something to stay away from, the little electrified fence.
And it's natural, I think, for all of us when somebody says, don't do that, to say, why not? Right?
Yeah.
And so we have this tendency to do that. But yeah, so my wife was always it, this, it was really, it's a very visual thing to think about the fact that, and the reality is, kids do what works, right? So if kids are misbehaving or they're having some difficulties or they're doing things, it's because it works for them. It achieves something they want. And frankly, you and I are the same, Cameron. We're all the same. We do what works, right? For us, when things stop working, we adjust. We make adjustments, right? And so I think to start with that groundwork, with our kids on the spectrum, a lot of times typical kids have kind of a line in the sand they'll draw that they know this is over this line is too much. Right.
Yeah.
They know they can inherently start to understand typical kids that stepping over this line is not good. Right. And I'm not going to, that's a line I'm probably not going to step over. Now, some kids do, and we have to address that. But our kids on the spectrum don't necessarily have the cognitive ability to understand where those lines are drawn. And so they can start doing things to get what they want that are way outside of the range of what we would normally think of as, right, as testing the boundaries, right? And for
Yeah.
instance, Cameron, you've experienced this too, right? Meltdowns, rage. I mean, I've had my 8-year-old come at me with a butcher knife, right? That's way over the line. But
Sure.
because he is, you know, on the spectrum, he doesn't see, there's nothing that seems to be over the line. And
Yeah.
so kids are always trying to, when you take things away from them and they stop working, they start looking for more and more things that do work. Right. And they'll move up from I'll run away to I'll commit suicide. And committing suicide is kind of the trump card for a lot of these kids. And I, maybe it came up because I was talking about I've worked with families who've had kids that have threatened suicide if they didn't get their way. But
Right.
I'm not an expert in this area. I mean, and I don't know if anybody's a true expert, right? Nobody knows everything. So I
Right.
want to create a disclaimer here. This is for informational purposes only.
And
Take
things
this.
that we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
I'm hoping as we discuss this, we actually get some more insight. I certainly, as much as I've been exposed to individuals who have committed suicide successfully, and those who have attempted, and then those who ideate on it, I'm still not a, I'm very shallow in my understanding of what's going on. Let me jump in and just say there are probably two instances that we're talking about here, and we need to be aware that there's a difference. One, as you use your the raptor analogy, there are some raptors that get injured. And they no longer test the fences, and they just hunker down and they die. Or they just don't, they stop being how do you say it again?
Velociraptors.
Awesome. Hey, 7 years of speech to be able to talk as poorly as I do. I love that. So there must be L's in there that I can't, my mind can't grasp. But anyway, so when we're talking about suicide or the threat of suicide, there are kids and adults, because I have adult relatives who have successfully killed themselves. And when I say successfully, I mean they're dead, caused by the mental illness or whatever it is that made the decision for them. And so as we talk, I'm going to start using language differently, just because it's such a sensitive subject. And since you invited me to come on, my mind has been spinning about thinking about my loved ones that will likely listen to us talk, and how I can be respectful of the things that have already happened, and then thinking about those strangers or those friends that haven't experienced the tragedy of someone succumbing to a mental illness, who in the future will, or who no matter what they do, that there is nothing they can do to prevent someone who's determined to end their life. And that's a horrible statement. And maybe I'm wrong, but someone's got to tell me, okay, well, what is it that you can real do in your circumstance to absolutely prevent somebody from taking their own life or ending their life who's determined to do so? Because for us, when I have two kids who ideate on suicide, and would maybe we should go over the different levels that
You know
I
what?
see.
I was going to suggest that, and we can, I wrote down three levels. Do it, right? I also wrote down attempt it, and then I wrote down threat of it. Now, I don't know if those are the right words, and if they aren't the right words, please forgive us, right? Because we don't really know. So we can step through each three of those, and we can go in either direction, however you want to do it, Cameron. I mean,
Let's change the word threat,
okay.
because one thing I've noticed, and so my sample size is not just my family. I've had neighborhood kids who've come to my home saying, "I'm not safe right now, and I want to kill myself. Can I hang out here?" And we're like, "Sure, yeah." And we talk to them, right?
Right.
And that's a weird place to be, to have it be that a neighborhood kid who's 14, 15 years old, comes over because you happen to have seen him on the side of the road one time, running down the road full bore barefoot, just running barefoot on rocky road, and pulling over and saying, "Hey, is everything okay?" And him just sobbing and saying, "No, nothing's okay." And then telling him, "Get in," and taking him home. And because of that one instance, then later when he is struggling and the demons are trying to get him to take action, he's not threatening.
Okay.
He's trying to prevent it the best he can. And he came over to our place because his parents were not available, and he knew that if he was alone, he was likely going to act.
Okay,
So,
so would the word ideate be better, or considering? I mean, one of those.
I like ideation.
Ideation, okay.
Ideation is a word that the professionals use as well.
Perfect. Let's do that. Let's do that. And again, please forgive us if we, Cameron and I are just talking straight out, where we don't pretend to be,
No.
and if we're offensive in some way or another, we have there's no intent to do that, right? The intent is totally and completely to be helpful and share our personal experiences, so that maybe somehow we can be okay. I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
If it feels like we're making a point, the points that we're likely to make is based on love and acceptance and action.
Perfect.
There's not things where that any points that come off as judgmental, well, I think that might be more inside of their heads about how they feel about the subject and less about how we are going to be talking about
it. And that may be offensive too. And if it is, we're doing this in a spirit of love.
We love you and we're sorry that you.
You know, Cameron, I think one of the reasons Cameron and I connect so well is because one of the pillars of success in my family is to do things in a spirit of love, especially when it's really, really hard. And Cameron and I have talked about this and how we both have that intent. Now, do we always succeed? No, we don't. But we've tried to make it part of our core, right? So the things that we try to do are, I would say, most of the time in a spirit of love. And if they come across as harsh, it's because it's just who we are, right? It's not meant in that direction. So, okay, so we've got ideation, we've got attempt, and we've got done it. Now, I'm gonna kind of pass it to you here and let you decide. Maybe you can just share some experiences. And I liked where you were going with done it. So maybe we start there and we go backwards.
Okay.
Because you said something yesterday that really, it was unsettling to me, but it was also very honest and forthright. And you said something like, listen, if somebody is going to commit suicide and they're determined, there's not a lot you can do about it.
And when you say a lot, you edited. I said there's nothing.
There's nothing. That's even more unsettling.
It's as concrete as I can. And if someone who's watching this knows of something that you can absolutely do if someone is bound and determined to end their life, how you as an external person can prevent it forever, then tell me. Because I've gone over this in my head, because my kids who've been struggling with depression and with suicide ideation and have attempted twice, and then my nephew who was successful, and then my other nephew who attempted, and that's a story I should probably tell you at some point, just the how messed up sometimes mortality is. But there, you can't watch them all the time unless you're locking them up. And even when you lock them up, it still happens. And you hear these cases on the news where someone who is under protective custody, who's had every means taken from them, still figures out a way to end their suffering and end their life. And generally speaking, so for me, as my wife and I dealt with our son, who was extraordinarily depressed and just wanted to end the pain that he was going through, we talked about all the things we could do. And just to give you an idea of how.
So now we've stepped from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've stepped from done it to attempt. And this,
okay.
I just want to make sure. Yeah.
Let's actually go back to done it.
Okay.
So,
okay.
My nephew committed suicide, and he's gone. He doesn't have any interaction with us or the family any longer. And his parents are still suffering from that decision and the consequences of that act. Now, there are probably hundreds of thousands of what if questions and things they think, maybe if I had, possibly if I could have, if only. And I've watched them outside looking in, and I've just wondered at what point they can possibly get to where they recognize that there was literally nothing that they could have done if their son was determined to end his life. Because now they're stuck. And are they making progress? Well, I hope so. It's still too fresh. You know, it is extraordinarily fresh. So,
Can I stop you there and just suggest real quickly here that when Shelley passed away, a friend of mine came to me and said, you know, they had also seen another gentleman whose Well, they had somebody in their family whose wife passed away. And they said to me, when these kids' mom passed away, they lost both parents.
Oh, interesting.
Because the father fell into, I think, maybe what you're talking about here, the what ifs and the all these things that can just tear us down. And I apologize. I mean, I'm not apologizing for being emotional because I can feel this. Right? I know how easy it is for us to start stepping into the what if, what could I have done differently? What, and it can ruin us. It can sap our energy and take us away from being who we need to be for other people and for ourselves. That can damage us too, right?
Yeah.
That tragedy can ruin it for us and for our kids that are left.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure, you know, I've talked about that in my program, how living in those feelings, I tell people it's okay to visit, but you don't want to live there because it can really damage you. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure people understand how devastating a tragedy can be a tragedy, but can also have long lasting effects if we're not careful, right?
Yeah.
And we live in it. So
and
I know it's, but it's hard to not do that, right?
And I'm going to go a little bit further and say that no matter what, you're going to be devastated.
Yeah, of course.
No matter how careful you are, the recovery, there are some things that you can do that might make it better. And Kyle, I think what makes you unique is I watch you try everything to get better in every aspect. If someone says, hey, try this thing that will improve your whatever by 25%, you're like, 25%, that's worth it. I'm going to try that. And you will attempt it and you'll put your all into it and then measure the results to determine whether or not you're going to continue to do it. What I've noticed is those who get into tragic circumstances without having a plan for how to deal with tragic circumstances, they don't know that there are things that they can do, or they don't know what things they should do that might make it better. If I was talking to my relatives whose son is gone, they would probably say there's nothing that can make it better. He's gone. And how are they supposed to prepare for this? You know, this is not anyway, there's a lot of things there as well. So if a loved one, someone that you're close to, ends their life, that is going to be devastating. And one of the things I talk about on my end is to avoid the devastating question of why and switch that to be for what reasons, because it takes a little bit of the stuck aspect of the question of why and turns it into a purposeful. Number one, it assumes that there is a reason for it. And then number two, it's when no matter what, when you were a little kid, if you, the why was always followed by punishment, right? Why'd you spill the milk? It slipped and you're in trouble, right? Why'd you go out with your friends on Saturday night? Well, because I wanted to, I'm now in trouble. And so every time our mind thinks of why, I think we've been programmed or conditioned to withdraw and actually not deal with it, because punishment, discipline always was part of that discussion. So just switching it for what reasons, and then the now what, for what reasons and now what, that can really help you decide to try some things that might help. And I hate the fact that those are so soft.
Okay, but so I want to come back to this, because one of the things I want to do at the end of this is revisit done it, attempt, and ideation, and talk about plan.
Okay.
I think that's the thing that saved our family after our tragedy, is immediately I said, I'm not the first one that this happened to. I'm not going to let it destroy my family. And I worked to create a plan.
Yeah.
Right. And so let's move from, if it's okay with you, let's move from done it to attempt, because you have some experience in this area.
Yep.
That I just want you to kind of tell the story. And then at the end, I want to go through and let's talk about plan, right? Because
okay.
I think the one thing I like to do is say, here's the challenge, right? Mm-hmm. What can we do about it? I mean, you and I can talk about it and we can say, you should make a plan. Well, okay, what plan, right? So I want to talk about that at the end for each of these and kind of map out some things that maybe people can start with. So this is super helpful for people.
Gotcha.
So let's move, if you're ready. I mean, if you have more,
yeah.
I think you're, okay, let's move to attempt, because I want to, maybe you can share some of your experiences with that.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily get into your plan, because I know you have, I know you've created one, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Absolutely.
Let's work through that.
Okay. So I'll tell a couple stories.
Perfect.
So my nephew, his life was ended and the way that I treat this respectfully is identify that it was a brain issue for him. At least that is my true hope. I can't imagine that he did this to cause as much pain as his actions have. So when he passed away, it was shocking to my family. He was my daughter's best friend. They communicated. She was the last one he talked to before his life ended. When we would go camping, my son and him would go, they were the closest in age, and we'd go camping with his family every year, and they would go do things and be adventurous together. And it impacted him dramatically too. And so what I remember my son going into a depression, and we started trying to do all the things that we'll talk about later. And one of the things we went on a trip to Moab, and on the way back from the trip from Moab, I was watching and, you know, just constantly watching what was going on with my kids who were at risk. And I noticed that my son started kind of pulling out of the deep depression, the ongoing depression that he was in. And I was like, oh, maybe we're turning a corner. And he asked if he could go spend the night with his other cousin. And because we were stopping in Salt Lake, and I was like, sure, go for it. And so he went and he spent the night with his cousin and connected with a friend that he'd had from Boise that had moved to that area. And things were going great. So we go home. It's Sunday, and I remember I was in my bedroom, and my son Hyatt comes running in and says, "Dad, cousin is on the phone and he's killing himself." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "He's on the phone right now and he's killing himself." And so I took the phone from him, and with my phone, I started calling his dad, and I started talking to my nephew, asking him for details. And he had taken a bunch of pills and he was hidden from his family. So he had decided that he wanted to get out of the pain. He had decided that this was his option. And he had taken a bunch of pills and then gone to away from his family to die. He didn't do this in the home. He did this away where they, in theory, couldn't find him. So I'm on the phone with him, asking him questions. I get a hold of his dad and I say, "You need to find your kid now. Find him." And he's like, "Well, he's a, you know, he does the, wait, he's not here, right?" And then they find him, they get him to the hospital, and they save his life. That was an attempt. That was a horrible circumstance. Now, why did he call my son? Maybe there was a twinge of, "I don't necessarily want to die." Maybe.
Right.
But he had set himself up to not receive help. He had set himself up to end the suffering and pain that he was going through. And I will say that now, years later, he is doing much better. And from what I understand, he doesn't battle suicide ideation and he hasn't had any other attempts. But that attempt with my son, who had just lost his other cousin that he was fairly close to, and then this cousin who he was really close to, and oh my goodness, there were 4 deaths in my son's peer group that he was close to, very close to, or at least knew well enough to feel the impact of their passing.
Sure.
And for him, it a little bit of evil thought just got stuck in his head, which was everyone's gonna die and it's not worth it. And
Did he
that
verbalize
troubled him.
this? Did your son verbalize this to you?
Not at the time,
Not at the
but
time. Okay.
later on.
Okay.
Yeah. In
Gotcha.
fact, you know, there's a remind me at some point to tell you about a friend of mine. His name's Antonio. He lives in South Carolina. One of the things I know we're getting into what to do, but one of the things we did when we started to struggle with this is a couple people who had dealt with the loss of their son or dealt with mental health issues or suicide, they reached out to us and they started coaching us. And they started to give us insight into their experience. And one of the families, I'll just call them the Hansons because that's their names, but there's lots of Hansons. Their son died a number of years ago, and they came over and they just laid it all out from their perspective and had a very open conversation. And then reached out to our son, who was struggling on a regular basis, trying to see if maybe might this might help, right? It
Right,
was all about the mites.
the might.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, so anyway, that was extraordinarily helpful and gave us perspective. And watching where they are now, here's something else, by the way. And I talked to the dad about this years before our family was exposed to the trial, but we were talking about spirituality in connection with higher a higher power, and he said in his experience it's interesting when his son died he tried to draw closer to the higher power because he needed to rely on something bigger than himself. And then he talked about years later watching others go through a similar circumstance, and they would withdraw from the higher power as if the higher power betrayed them.
It's
So.
something we all go through. It's a question we ask ourselves in the height of those difficult moments. We're not above, no one's above it. I've experienced that myself. But you're absolutely right. There's no better place to turn, right? I find it interesting that people are believers, right? And I think people that are watching this know that I am, and they obviously know that you are now too. But people are believers, and then when something goes wrong, right, you can't decide to be a believer when everything's great and then just turn on it when things go bad, right? It's not fair to you and it's not fair to God, right? And so it's when it's the hardest, right? When you're at your most vulnerable, and I've experienced this, that is when the adversary says, ah, they're at their most vulnerable. If I can get them to turn now, I have got them. I can make them miserable and unhappy. And right. And that threat is real. I have felt it. And you just described it beautifully in your statement about, right? And it's hard. You don't want to turn, you feel like they could have been saved. God can save anybody.
That's
Why
true.
didn't he? Why didn't he? Right? And so it's easy to turn away. When it's the worst thing you can do, it's gonna damage you. You'll fall into depression. Like you said, there's depression, there's anxiety, there's discouragement, there's fear, and all those things are emotions that lead us away from goodness and away from God. So, sorry, Cameron.
No, that's great insight. So Anyway, I know that's part of the plan.
Yeah.
Talking to others, finding others who've gone through it and have the results that you kind of want afterwards. Because, you know, and the other thing is, if just to throw this out there, you and I have talked quite a bit about loss of spouse, and my spouse is still around, but I feel, I don't ever want to test this, but I feel more prepared than I would have been had we not had the discussions.
Oh yeah,
So,
I've got a pretty serious plan, Cameron. I'm willing to share with anybody.
yeah.
And my plan works, which is really great. You know, I mean, it's as horrible as that is to say, right? I think it's, yeah. Can you share?
Do you want me to share about one of my son's attempts?
Let's do that. And then let's get into your, you mentioned yesterday, another, you know, the ideation as well. So yeah, do that.
So, my son was saved from his two attempts, one by himself and one by someone who, well, I guess there were three. So let's talk about what makes an attempt. An attempt is when you have gone through all the ideation, you have a plan, you have a means, and you have a date, and that date comes and you decide to act. So that's my definition.
Okay.
I don't, you know, clinically, who I follow your trusted advisors. Don't trust some guy on YouTube or Facebook. You know, if this rings true to you, study it out. And if it resonates, then maybe it will work and help you in your situation, but you should talk to some trusted advisors. Anyway, sorry.
You know what? Before you move forward, I want to ask you this because yesterday we talked about signs, right? And people's fear of paying attention to signs. So maybe that's more important than even your personal experience, right? Is what did you see that or did you miss? And what, because that's the first thing, right? And how did you overcome the fear of thinking? I know a lot of parents, when they come across this, they think, my kid's depressed. How depressed? Oh, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to, if he's so depressed, I can't handle that. Right. But so let's talk about the signs and why you have to. It's vital that you do step into it.
So, when my son was in, even when he was in the worst state, he would usually communicate with me. And the thing that probably I'm going to call the thing that made it so that he's still around more than anything else is we had established a relationship that where he could share things that from his perspective were awful to me, and I would accept the fact that he just shared something without the typical judgment that a lot of parents might feel. I felt them, but I didn't let the feel come out in my reaction. So a lot of it was, oh, and then I would ask him a question. So I was accepting of what he was sharing, and then I would ask another question. When he
Let me ask you this.
was,
I'm going to stop you there because this is an important point, I think, Cameron. What you just said was very non-emotional, right? And I think that's a key to this thing is we almost have to say to ourselves, listen, because we as parents can get very bent or very emotional. If my son came to me and said, Dad, I'm super depressed and I'm considering suicide, I might go into fight or flight. And fight or flight would be shutting down the line of communication, right? Because the son would say, I don't want to deal with that knucklehead. I'm not talking to him anymore about this situation in my life, right? So I think it's an important one of the things you said there that really resonated with me is that our kids should be able to come to us with problems and really hard stuff. And we have to take a second and breathe and say, I need to listen. In a non-emotional state, right? A logical state. There are emotions involved for sure. But if I let my fight or flight because I'm scared or I don't like what's happening, if I let that take over, the kids will slow, they'll discontinue that communication, right? Because they don't like the re they just want to they want to tell us without any, like you said, judgment, punishment, consequences. They want to be able to share these things, right? And so that's good for you to it's good to know that. And we also it also well, let me just stop there and let you finish, because I think for parents, one of the things that you've done that I've seen is been able to step out of the emotion of it and say, "Oh, really? Tell me more," right? And I've become an expert at this too. When my son gets heightened and screams and yells and threatens to hurt me and I'll kill you and all this stuff, I say, I don't want you to kill me. I would never kill you." And I'm not in, right. I have a plan to address those things, so that we don't both go into this fight or flight and it escalates tremendously. So.
And I think one thing that might help others is to recognize what their job is as a mom, dad, loved one, mentor, peer, whatever their what is their role in dealing with another human. And one of my primary first beliefs is that it's someone else's right to choose. They get to choose. That agency that to be able to act for themselves, including children to some extent, there's boundaries there,
Right.
but it is the thing that I'm my job is to not prevent them from making a choice or to force them to make a specific choice, but my job is to help them deal with the consequences of their decisions and of this. So there's a couple, there's three things. Okay, one, mortality has trials. Being alive, you're going to get sick, you're going to have headaches, you're going to lose an arm, you're going to break a back or three in your family. You're going to have trials because of mortality. Other things are consequences of other people's decisions. Someone's going to injure you emotionally, spiritually, or physically. Someone else's decisions, you might get laid off from a job. Things outside of your control, but out. But because of someone else's decision. And then I do believe that there are trials given by our higher power to help us grow. Now, I'm not God, and so I can't tell which one it is. So my response when I'm working with one of my kids or someone I love or someone that has happened into my home and is sharing with me that they want to end their life is to deal with the consequences of that situation. Whether it was caused by their own decisions, whether it was caused by someone else's decisions, or if it was caused by being mortal in, being a human, I don't care. I don't need to know the reason that it's happening. I can just deal with the fact that I get to help that individual deal with the consequences of where they find themselves. So, as a dad, I didn't adopt that with my oldest two or three, but I got it. I figured it out by number four, and I'm applying it, and we'll continue to see how it works out with five, six, and seven, and eight. He's still seven, so there's not a whole lot of going on there where we get to practice it, but
Gotcha. So number one sign is when communication stops,
yeah, when they
isolation, or
withdraw.
withdraw. Okay. And you mentioned yesterday when they change their patterns, right? And if a kid is outgoing and he changes his pattern, or if a kid is isolated and he changes his pattern. So it's just a change in pattern that it
Should
can be a
cause
sign of
your
these things.
the alert bells to go off so that you're paying more attention.
Okay. So
And
pay attention to those alert bells, okay?
the hard thing was when someone might have bipolar where they have their ups and their downs, it might
Right.
be difficult. Because they're swinging in the course of a week, they might swing twice from up to low and then back to up. You might not, you might get exhausted from the swings because you're constantly being told to be on alert. And you know what? At some point, you need to establish that, oh, that swing, that's their pattern, right? And so you don't have to be as hyper aware. I love good heist movies, and I love good heist stories. And one of the ways that you can go and steal something is the person on guard, you cause a bunch of false alarms, because then it's the boy who cried wolf syndrome, and they don't pay attention. You can go in and steal it.
Diversion. Yeah.
There you go. So anyway, for my son, he was well, one time he was in school, and he had decided to end it. He had a way to, and he could get to the way to, and he had a date. And so he left school to go and end his life. And what a blessing, some teacher noticed him leaving school. And that, once again, Hyatt is an extraordinarily good kid. He has actual moral OCD. That's a diagnosis thing. And that's the easy name to say. I can't
You
remember the
said
long.
moral OCD?
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
so not so he has to be perfect
Yeah.
in God's eyes, or what he perceives to be God's eyes. Oh, so if he has a bad thought, it beats him up. Or if he sees a pretty girl and if he goes down a path, he beats himself up. Oh, wow,
Yeah.
that's rough.
It is. And it's really
Yeah.
hard for him to apply the atonement of Christ, because he shouldn't need to, right? He
Right,
knows
right.
what right and wrong is. And then, oh, something else that he's really done great at figuring out and overcoming, but for a while there, it would cause him distress and pain for someone else who knew the rules and chose to break them.
Oh,
Because, you know, oh my goodness.
he was carrying their weight as well.
He was, yeah.
Boy,
So,
that's heavy.
yeah.
My
So,
weight alone is heavy enough. I don't really need to be carrying any other.
yep.
Golly, gosh.
By the way, one of the things that helped him put it into language that could be understood is for him to transfer that load to someone else is a giant swimming pool full of water. And you have hoses connected to you, and you're absorbing water. You don't need to absorb other people's water. You can take that hose and give it to God.
Yeah.
And so it's still being dealt with, because it must be dealt with, but
Right.
that's not your responsibility to filter the pool. You can hand that to God to filter
That's a
it.
good mental picture to create for all of us, right? In circumstances. Okay.
Yeah.
I like
So
that.
this teacher recognized, well, that's unusual for this good kid who is almost perfect, right? Who strives for perfection to leave and, you know, go truancy to leave the school. So he just latched onto him and started walking with him and talked to him and didn't let him be alone. And that's one of the how to when is to have to be there and have somebody there.
Connection.
Connection with others, yeah. So there'll be the connection with self stuff that we'll talk about, and there'll be the connection with deity, and there's the connection with others. And this tool, I am so grateful. There are kids that I can't help to but get emotional when I think about them, because without prompting and without coaching, they were there for my son when he was having a really, really rough time battling suicide ideation. And I'll tell one other story. So the teacher prevented him from being able to act. Another time, once again, break in pattern. Hyatt always tells us where he's going. We communicate about everything. Well, he left without telling us. And I looked on his phone, and once again, he had been in a low. And then it stabilized as a low, and then he went lower. And so Sarah and I were talking, and Sarah, you know, mama, the she said, "Will you check on Hyatt?" And I couldn't find him in the house. And so then I pulled up my phone, and I could see that his phone was moving in the neighborhood, and he had gone pretty far away, and you know, by foot. And at the time, the way that he had planned his other suicides and attempted was motor vehicle accident. So that sent me into a little bit of a panic. And as I drove to go find him, I was trying to figure out what I could do. And I wanted to go pick him up, but I felt like I shouldn't. And so instead, I found him, got eyes on him. And then as I drove far enough behind that I was away from him, I started thinking, am I going to see my son kill himself? Because when I was 14, 13 or 14, a friend of mine, his name was Jeff, and he killed himself with a firearm. And from what I understand, and once again, I was 14 at the time, so what information do I have that was actually real? From what I understand, he did it in front of his dad, who was chasing him, trying to get the gun away. And so here I am, those thoughts going through my mind, looking at my son who just wants the pain to end. He wasn't, his suicide notes, they were calling anyone out for failing him. It was all apology. And it was, he actually wrote, "Please don't blame the driver. I'm going to make it so he couldn't avoid me." So this kid, even in his last act, trying to escape the pain, just didn't want anyone else to suffer more because of him. And so I'm watching him, and he notices me, and I just stay far back. And later on, eventually I sent him a text message. And I saw him get it and he looked at it. And I just said, "Hey, I can give you a ride wherever you want to go. If you want to get away from the house, I'll take you." And eventually he responded and I picked him up, got him in the car, and we just drove around. And Hyatt had been hospitalized 5 times to prevent his death. And I can't actually remember if this was one of those times that we hospitalized him, because he got in the car and we started talking and the communication started happening again. And I asked him, "Well, how come you didn't do it?" And he goes, "Well, I didn't want to do it in front of you." I was like, "Okay, thank goodness."
Yeah.
Right?
So,
So
golly. Wow. Okay. I think we need to step away from this for a second.
okay.
We're gonna move. If it's okay with you, let's move to ideation.
Yeah.
Because I wanna end this with some helpful, like I want to talk about a plan. We've gone on, right? And I'm appreciative of you sharing this information. Let's talk about ideation a little bit, because I'll just start by saying I never had any thoughts of, right? So I've that's
Have
not
you
who
thought
I am.
about death, though?
After Shelley passed away, the idea of dying was
Okay.
pleasant.
Yep.
Not because I can't carry the weight of this world,
Mm-hmm.
but because the seeing her again sounded so great. Now, I don't think I'm brave enough. I've never made a plan. I've never set a date, but I never even experienced that. I've never in my life experienced saying I'd really rather be dead, right?
Okay. So what's interesting, Kyle, is the language you're using, you're identifying different levels of what could be considered suicide ideation. So the one that most people can at least relate to is wondering what it would be like to be dead, questioning one's mortality. And if you've not wondered that, now that I've talked about it, your brain's going to automatically go, "Yeah, I wonder what it is like to be dead." whether you're a person of faith or not. So that's like one level, and most of us have experienced that. Then you have the where you wish you were dead, or one way to that people phrase it is, and I say people, the people I've talked with, is I just don't want to wake up in the morning. I want to pass away in my sleep and not deal with what I'm dealing with, right? And that's another level. That's the desire to be dead. So one is, what is it going to be like? The other one is, oh, that looks better than what I have now.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's an infinite number of degrees and gradations between there, but this is what I've identified with my kids and with the neighborhood kids and the people that I've interacted with now. So you have that questioning that, by the way, for me, I questioned what it would be like to be dead as a young child. So after this life, we go into this world, and then we're in the spirit world, and we wait for the resurrection. What is that like? And so from just a happy kid, never suicide, just wondered what it would be like. Then that progresses, and so you have wanting to just have something else take you out. The thought of you dying from something, natural causes, or someone else's actions, or your body breaking down, that is no longer fearful or to be avoided.
Right.
So there's some risk taking that can take place at that point, right? There's some things that people that young people who are battling depression and pain or chronic pain, they might put themselves into higher risk circumstances, not to kill themselves, but it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing if they did. And that's what you were talking about, right?
Yeah, and I have those thoughts have. People told me after my wife passed away, you really need to take care of yourself. And the thought crossed my mind, I wonder if I don't take care of myself, I can die naturally a lot faster and be with Shelly again. Maybe, and that seemed like a reasonable option.
Yeah,
Because I'm not
reasonable. I
taking,
love that word. I love
I'm
that
not
word.
taking my own life, but I do get to see her quicker. And it's natural, right? It's natural. And then people can't be mad at me if it's natural, right? They can't say Kyle gave up if it's natural, right? Because I'm not a give up guy. That's not who I ever want to be, right? But that's beside the point. Share with me a little bit about you share with me a story about your daughter not wanting to do something, and how that was an interesting picture of it there. And I want you to share that. And that might lead us into how to create a plan for each one.
So, my daughter has been struggling with depression and battling anxiety for a couple years now. And I learned something, Kyle, through my son's experience, and that is, we do more harm removing things that are uncomfortable for our kids than we help them. And I because my first principle is agency, right? People should choose, including kids. I've now added they should be able to choose, including kids, but kids have boundaries,
Right.
right? So one of the things my daughter who gets social anxiety, and it is a little debilitating, and I say a little bit, she's not able to, the anticipation of the activity kills her. She goes into a slump. She doesn't The dread and the fear of what's going to happen, it just is a turmoil inside. She's not as communicative as my son is. So by the way, my son has given me permission to talk about this with anybody as I see fit. My daughter hasn't, so I won't be using her name.
Perfect.
But so hi, it's like, get this out because I want people to know. I want them to be able to deal with it. He's in a different spot than my daughter. So Anyway, my daughter, there was a social activity that was coming up that she was going to go to, but as the time approached, she then told her mom that she wasn't going to go. She didn't feel well. Well, what does that mean? What does not feel well? You know, Cameron Watson from 30 years ago would have been like, well, then you shouldn't go. If you don't feel well, that's a good enough excuse. Don't go. This last week would be okay, tell me more. What does it mean you don't feel well? And so I started asking her questions, and she was nervous. She had anxiety and she didn't want to go. And I said, well, you need to go because those are not reasons not to participate for her, right? Every child is different. You have to be use judgment and discernment. But then she said, well, I just don't feel safe. And I was like, ah, tell me more about that. Because that is a card that kids will learn in therapy, gets them out of doing a lot. Because if a child is not safe, all the adults in their lives are by design protectivism going to make them safe. And when they don't feel safe, there might be a reason they aren't safe. And so a lot of parents will take, I don't feel safe, as, uh-oh, this is trouble. Let's help this person be safe because they're not safe. If they don't feel safe, they're not safe. So we got to help them. Well, that's not true. If they don't feel safe, you need to find out more, and they might be safe. And the way I look at it is I have a fear of heights. And yes, the joke is I'm scared all the time because I'm tall. But when I get near an edge of something, even if there is a rail, most of the time, the rail is just low enough that it would cause me to spin on my way down to my death, right? So I don't want anything to do with the edge of things. I might feel very unsafe, but I'm still safe. So the feeling doesn't equal reality. Now, as an adult, I recognize that. As a teenager, I recognize that. I went rappelling. Is there any sensation worse than transitioning from an upright position where you're on your own 2 feet to leaning back into a harness where you're supported by a rope when you're scared of heights? I don't know, but I did it because I knew that my feeling wasn't reality. So with my daughter, I had to help her identify, number one, is this reality or is it? There could have been a couple other options too. Was she doing it just to avoid the activity? And you know what? If she just didn't want to go to the activity, that's one thing. But she never said that. She actually said, I actually love the activity. I just don't feel right. Well, let's talk about it. So she threw the safe card out there. I was like, okay, tell me more. What are you not safe with? And I said, are you concerned that you're going to hurt yourself on purpose? She's like, no, because there are consequences if someone is going to hurt themselves on purpose. And she threw out the safe, and then as I got more details, it was that she emotionally didn't feel secure. I was like, well, is someone going to be bullying you there? Because my appropriate response is to, of course, not have you go to that situation, and then I'm going to go prevent that bullying, the bully from interacting with you, or we'll figure out a place to make it safe. So it was identifying whether the feeling was legitimately not safe. And that's where a lot of parents, because of the mental illness aspect and the counseling and the therapy and all the professionalisms that come into play and the hospitalizations, but my daughter who's dealing with this, we've never hospitalized her because we know we can tell because we talk to her and we identify where she's at. Now, could we make a mistake and could she end her life? Yes. Would that be awful? Absolutely. But because we know the different levels of suicide ideation and we've been conditioned a little bit that, hey, unless you're about to attempt, we're okay, right? We don't have to take action unless you're about to attempt. And so that's a weird place to be as a dad, because that means you can accept your child who's having all the feelers of suicide and ideation on suicide and is at a level eight as far as they want to die. They have a plan, they have a means, but they haven't set a date yet. you can deal with them without, you can talk about life and you can help them deal with the consequences of being in that situation. It's where some parents, and when I say some, I'm talking about me. At first, when it was like, I want to end my life. Oh, okay. Do we need to put them in a straitjacket? Where do we build a padded room?
This is
What
a
do we?
this is fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
This is and it's natural.
Yeah.
Now, I got a quick question for you. I'm going to deviate just a second
Sure.
because I have seen, I've worked with a lot of parents who have had kids that have used the threat as a trump card to, you mentioned, I think when we remove things from their life that are good for them, we could be doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
But kids understand, they figure out, right? They're velociraptors. They say, hey, if I say I'll kill myself, everybody backs down. And so, are there, I have seen occasions where that threat is made because it's a tool in a kid's toolbox. Now,
Can I say this? No matter what, if a child says they're going to kill themselves, your response has to be the same. And it should never be to back off.
Perfect. See, this is where we
And come on, this is the soapbox, right?
Yes, this
You
is
for
what
taking it to be wrote out. I'm sorry, that was judgmental and not in a spirit of love. But let me get back to the where we want to be. If a child is saying that they're going to commit suicide, I don't care the reason, whether they're trying to avoid something that's uncomfortable or if they're wanting to truly die, your response needs to be the same, which is to find out more information. Find out if they have the ability. Okay, now we're going to get into what I do. Okay, this is Cameron Watson, not any
Perfect. Perfect.
doctor
That's
thing.
the only person you know, right?
That's right.
That
So I asked them, okay, so where are you at? So you say you want to die. Have you thought about ways to die? And then I usually coach them, especially the younger they are, because I was talking to a mom and she has an 11-year-old who she is so concerned is probably suicidal. And she said, probably suicidal. And she's scared to death to interact with them because she doesn't want to push them into suicide and she doesn't want to give them ideas. And I get that. But you know what? I don't think it's I think they all have the ideas if they're going to have them. And if you ask the questions in a certain way, it's less likely that you're going to give them ideas. Okay. So for me, I start off with my 8-year-old at the time. He's now 9, when he was having a really bad day and just said, I don't want to anymore. I was like, well, so tell me, have you, what does that mean? And he goes, I just don't want to do anything. I was like, oh, and I just said, when I was a kid, I used to think about what would it be like to not be here immortality anymore. Have you ever thought about that? And what are some of the things that you have thought about? And I said, that's typical. A lot of people do it because there's a lot of kids who think that there's something wrong with them. And that they have to act because they don't realize that a lot of people think of these things. And so it's normal to think about them and it's normal not to act on them. Right. So if you can help them recognize one, hey, a lot of people have these sensations and a lot of people deal with them and you don't have to act on them.
Okay, I'm going to
So,
go back. Let me stop you real quick because I want to go back to something.
okay.
We're going to keep going back to this, which is number one, you don't go into fight or flight when kid says, I'm going to kill myself, right? And you approach this situation, which is how we should approach all situations with all of our kids in a spirit of love,
Yeah.
right? And I've noticed that you go straight into it, but I know you because I know you.
Yeah.
And I know you don't say, you don't do it. You don't say, well, tell me what you mean. You don't have that
Right.
attitude, right? You say, oh,
I
in
do.
your
That is
mind,
the
you say,
word.
I
Oh.
love this. I love you. I want to know what you mean. Tell me what you mean. And it
Yeah.
comes, it feels different. The kids know they can inherently feel when you say, I'm going to do this in the spirit of love, especially when it's hard. And I know you enough to know that when you know, I've talked to parents who I give them the steps, but they don't do it in a spirit of love. They walk through these steps and it almost sounds like they're condescending to their kids, right? Oh, really? You're going to kill yourself. What do you mean? Now that's going to get you in trouble, right? What's not going to get you in trouble is saying, tell me what you mean. I need to understand. And open that line of communicate. Don't run away. Don't go into fight or flight. Go into a spirit of love and start to communicate, connect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we talk just a second about the difference between compassion and empathy?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Okay. So my goal is to show compassion. And I used to, when I was growing up, and in fact, I listened to a cassette tape to say you can really become an empathetic person by matching the breathing of the other person and matching their posture so that you can really feel what they're feeling. And I used to think that that was like the highest level of human connection was empathy. What I've learned now is it is dangerous to get really, really good at being empathetic with people struggling with death and depression. And so I've now changed it. I'm no longer trying to teach my kids empathy. I'm trying to teach them compassion.
Why is it dangerous? Empathy dangerous in those situations?
Because when, let's use something extreme. Let's use, so someone killed my child. And I hate the person who killed them. And I want to go out and I want to murder that person. And I want to torture them. And I want to end their life so passionately. Now, someone else, less mature, if they have empathy, what are they able to do to help me? If they have empathy, all they can do is feel the exact same passion and hatred towards this other individual. Does that help me get out of this rut where I'm contemplating doing evil in response to the situation?
Okay.
It doesn't help at all. It just reinforces it.
Right.
Oh, okay. You're right, man. Hey, there's a type of knife, right? What? That's extreme. I'm morbid, if you haven't figured.
No, it's okay.
But compassion on the other side, it doesn't matter how mature you are. You can learn compassion. And that is to identify and say, oh man, I can tell you're hurting. You are passionate. And I have concern for you. Instead of feeling what they're feeling, you have compassion for where they're at and what they're going through. And when your child is suicidal, or worse, when a relative of yours has lost their child, and if you have empathy, it'll shut you down too. It's risky. Compassion, absolutely. Have compassion, but don't fall into the trap of empathy where you get stuck.
And well, empathy is more of a, I'm going to probably use the wrong words here, but empathy seems like you can understand how they feel, right? And there's no question that we can, obviously you can't get the full scope unless you've experienced what they've experienced, but you can be empathetic without.
Well, you're the one who teaches how powerful the mind is.
Yeah, for sure.
You're the one who talks about how you can create emotion off of the thought. So if you're imagining and you're trying to be empathetic with someone, you can get yourself pretty dang close to the same.
Absolutely. And my point is, connection with people is powerful.
Yeah.
And so empathy is a powerful tool to connect, but your outward expression should be of compassion, right?
Mm.
Because you, am I jumping the gun
well,
there?
I think that the risk
compassion
of
is,
empathy.
To me, compassion is a, let me, compassion is an action word, right?
Okay.
And so compassion creates action for other people. Empathy is just this connection. I'm not sure it creates action, right?
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong there, but
and
I don't
so
know.
Connection, So
People, here's what, and let me tell you where I'm coming from this, because I see all these pages out there of people who are struggling. And people get on there and they struggle together. They say, I know how you feel. I've experienced this exact same thing.
They're expressing
It's
empathy.
hard. It is what it is, you know. And what can end up happening is they can all get in this big bucket of pain and suffering together. No action is taken to escape. Now, they do feel good because they get empathy. They go to these pages because they don't feel alone, but they don't feel alone in their pain.
You're right.
Right?
I see what you're saying.
Compassion, to me, compassion is going into those things and saying, listen, I get it. I've lived it. I've been there. But you don't have to live that way. You don't have to stay in that state. Right? I can connect with you with empathy, but I can also help you escape and move forward with compassion, right? And so, and by the way, I get kicked out of Facebook pages all the time because I say, you don't have to live like that. And people say, just listen and support me. And I'm like, okay, it becomes this echo chamber of everybody thinking there is no escape, right? Everybody's so empathetic and so understanding, and we experience it too. We're all in this together. Then it's an echo chamber, and people say, well, everybody's feeling like I am. Nobody has escaped. This must be the new world we live in, right? And then if you come in and say something alternative to that, hey, listen, I get it. You can even be as empathetic as you want, but the minute you say, you don't have to stay here. You don't have to live this way. You don't understand my personal situation. I've got this unique child and this unique, and they jump to these, right? They all want to talk about how unique they are, and we all are unique. But between you and I, we've experienced quite a bit of stuff that's probably pretty similar, but you don't have to live there, right? That to me, that's compassion. It's saying, I want to help you. I saw something recently. It said, the hero and the villain both have the same backstory, right? The villain has been abused and damaged and experienced a lot of pain, and now is gonna fight back against the world, and he's gonna make the world suffer for his pain and suffering, right? Now, the hero has experienced pain and suffering and been abused and face this kind of stuff. And he comes out of it and he says, you know what? I don't want anybody else to have to suffer. I'm going to make sure nobody else suffers. So I'm going to save people. Right. To me, it's kind of the different. It's almost, empathy perpetuates it. Maybe compassion helps you move above. Right. And I'm sure I'm really adding a lot of this to what you're saying, but hopefully you're
No,
not too
I
offended.
think I get what you're saying. And so for me, empathy is such a trap that because if you truly do empathize with someone who's depressed, you will feel depressed. That's the bottom line for me, and it's a trap. So I recognize that I can start to make that connection that is similar to empathy, but it needs to be in the realm of compassion.
Perfect.
And so that's where I really try to shift my focus is to not completely understand them, but to identify and be able to have compassion where they are, which requires me to know where they're at, but it removes that feeling so that I don't also feel that way. And when your wife died, it messed me up, Kyle. I had too much empathy for you. I shut down for a full day. And I know that sounds ridiculous because sorry, this is probably a little too real, but when I got that voicemail from you telling me that Shelley had died, I broke because all I could do was think about what would happen if Sarah died. And it was not good. It was not healthy. And I recognize that ability to have empathy for you didn't help you at all. And that ability to feel empathy myself didn't help much. When I shifted it to be compassion later on and say, oh, wow. what would that be like? And I could do it from a compassionate thing instead of trying to feel it. And that's the difference. Empathy truly is, feeling what the other person is feeling. And that's a trap, because if they're struggling or if they're in a dire situation where they're not able to take action, or the action they want to take is not healthy, then you're in that trap too. So compassion is where I've recognized is a higher, more beneficial way of connecting with people. Same beginning as empathy, but it deviates before you get trapped yourself. So,
Yeah, we kind of got off on a tangent here, didn't we,
yeah,
Cameron?
we did. But I love that. That's why, anyway.
This is two guys who've been through some stuff that are just chatting about their experiences, right? Let's talk
Yeah.
about let's just jump to I want to go back to plan, right?
Okay.
And one of the things I teach in my program is a formula called the cost formula. It's what is the challenge, what is the objective, long-term objective. What's the strategy and what's the tactics, right?
Yep.
And then adjust, 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 right? So cost is challenge, objective, strategy, tactics. And I think too often we either, when we face tragedy and it actually happens, right? We're forced to make adjustments. Okay. We either fall apart or we rise up. Right? There's basically two options, or we just kind of are in limbo, I guess, for a long time. Two of those options are not good, right? For us or for others. And just being in limbo or falling apart doesn't help anybody. So I believe my personal opinion, and you and I have talked about this, is any trial, it's only a trial if you don't know what to do, right? If you have a plan and you act on that plan, then you're working at learning and growing and, rising up and becoming better. So I mentioned the cost formula. What's the challenge? What's the long-term objective? What's the strategy and what's the tactics? But let's talk about, and we've kind of covered it a little bit as we've gone, but when we're talking about, step one, which is, we called it ideation. You've kind of given the plan in your stories, right? Number one, always approach it in a spirit of love. Don't fight or flight, right? Which is hard, but you should only, my opinion is this, you should only fight or flight once. Once you fight or flight once, then it's a challenge and you need to address that challenge, right? Your friend who's afraid to talk to her son is not addressing that challenge, and it could possibly escalate. It could go away,
It could.
but it could also possibly escalate and she'd be even more and more scared and not step into, in a spirit of love, communicating, asking questions, connecting, right? All those things that you talked about are the most powerful things you can do.
Yeah. The risk for her is that it's going to turn out to be what you said, which is the tragedy will occur and that will fo force adjustments.
Right.
So you can choose to step into it now, or you might be forced to step into it later.
Right. And my, my opinion, right? If I face, after my wife passed away, things happened that I would go to Walmart. I mean, I went, it was the month before Thanksgiving, and I had to go to Walmart and buy a turkey all by myself. I'd never bought a turkey before, right? And I'm walking around in Walmart, falling apart. And then I see an old couple. And I get mad because I wanted to grow old with my wife. And I'm walking around Walmart. I must have looked like an idiot. I mean, I had physical tears running down my face. It was horrible. And I came home and I thought, you know what? Maybe I should think about some things that may affect me, and I should probably create a plan for managing myself, my emotions in a better state, right? And so I think a lot of people don't want to do that, right? If they face something, this is what creates anxiety. And it's hard to come home and say, I don't want to face that again, right? But you will. There's no, you're going to have to face stuff. And so I came home and wrote up a plan, right? the next time I go to Walmart, here's my steps I'm going to take. Here's the tactics, right? This is the
Yeah.
Walmart turkey strategy, which is so silly, but I needed that, right? I can't be falling apart everywhere. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's natural. But I've become so accustomed to when I see a challenge that I think might be a problem, I don't want it to grow to the tragedy,
Yep.
right? I want to say, ooh, I see that could really become something severe,
Yeah.
right? So when my wife passed away, we weren't the first people that had happened to, right?
Right.
I knew my kids weren't the first kids that had lost their mother, right? Your wife actually was one that I talked to and asked a lot of questions. I don't know if you even know that, but at dinner one night, I started peppering her with questions because your wife lost her mom.
Thermal. Yep.
Yeah. And I started asking her questions. What happened? What did you do? What's going on? How did you feel? Because I knew I needed to learn from others who had experienced it. You talked about modeling, and that was all part of me creating a plan for my family moving forward, right? The
Yeah.
challenge is it's going to be hard without Shelly.
Yep.
Long-term objective is I want to be happy. I want my kids to be happy. I want them to be well adjusted. I want them to live their fullest and happiest lives possible. Doesn't mean tragedy won't happen, right? What's the strategy? And so I sat down and created a strategy and said, what are my tactics? Once a month, I'm going to take each one of my kids individually out. We're going to have real conversations alone. I'm going to connect with them, ask them how they're feeling. So, I think the challenge here is for parents who see depression and say, oh my gosh, I hope that doesn't grow. Or I'm going
Yeah.
to pray. Hope and a prayer is wonderful. It's not a plan, right? Hoping a prayer is hoping a prayer, and it's wonderful to have hope and a prayer,
I
right?
think you're supposed to have hope and a prayer after you make a plan.
After you make a
So,
plan, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's, but too many don't, right? They say, "Oh, I hope they grow out of it," or "I'm going to
Yep.
pray to God that they grow out of it," right? These are things that I think can we all do.
Yeah.
That next step is a plan, right? And so, if I'm understanding you correctly, it all starts with connection, paying attention to your kids. If you have kids that are depressed or they're discouraged, it's time to start talking to them and asking them how they're feeling and what's going on and helping them navigate these difficult times, right?
Yep.
And find other people that have experienced these things, get real with them, ask them to share with you. You're gonna learn what not to do from people
Yeah. They will
as well
share
as
it more
learn what
than
to do from people. Yeah.
you. Yep.
When Shelly passed away, I learned what not to do more than I learned what to do,
Yeah.
right? Because so many people, that tragedy has ruined a lot of families. And I met way too many of them. And I said, that crap ain't happening to us. I
Yeah.
am not having that. So I know what not to do, right? I'm
Yep.
on the path to what to do. But a big part of it is if your kids know too, there's no greater expression of love for your kids than for you to say, I care enough to talk to you in a spirit of love, to communicate with you, to understand how you're feeling and what you're feeling and know exactly where you're at. Pay attention to your patterns and be in your life, right?
Yeah.
And kids, I like to say, kids don't respond to them hearing I love you. They respond to them feeling I love you.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that's really where it happens is you mentioned a couple times, we can't take away, we shouldn't try to take away. If we do take away difficult things from our kids, we're doing them more harm than good, number one. Number two, in a spirit of love, learn to calm yourself when the chaos erupts, when the storm comes, you have to be the calm in the storm as the parent. And
Yeah.
you have to go into it in a spirit of love. Right. And that's one of the three pillars of our family are we're always going to do what's best for our family long term, even if it's really hard. We're always going to do what's best for our kids on the spectrum long term, even if it's really hard. And sometimes that's hard.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes that means letting them suffer and struggle and right. And we're always going to do it in a spirit of love, especially when it's really hard. Okay. And so if we can catch ourselves early on and say, listen, I need to address this. If I see something, don't ignore it and don't say, don't hope in a prayer, right? Connect. That's one of the things that you talked about over and over and over is connecting.
Yeah.
Right. In a spirit of love, calm yourself. Don't, if you're in fight or flight and you're talking to your kids in fight or flight, you're not helping.
That's right. And the having your response plan dialed in so that you respond the same regardless of whether or not it's life-threatening immediate or if it's the beginning of a long road to recovery, it doesn't matter which way it is. Your response is the same, which
right.
is what we're talking about, the costs aspect.
Yeah, and this is what is the challenge? Write it down, spell it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you know, in this case, your friend who's she's worried her 11-year-old, write out the challenge. I'm worried. What's the long-term effects? How is it going to affect my son, my family? Write it all out because it creates a bigger why for you to get involved, right?
Yeah.
Your objective, O is for objective. Long term, I want him to feel loved. I want to connect with him. I want him to learn to manage his emotions. I need to manage my emotions, right? These are my objectives. What's the strategy? Maybe
and
you
I
just
think on the objectives, it's completely appropriate to prioritize them because
perfect.
Sometimes your objective long term is to keep them alive so that you can do the rest of the objectives, right? So some of the objectives are more important immediately than the others. And it's helpful to know that there is a difference and give yourself a little grace, a little bit of permission to mess up your priorities, but to have them written down.
And
Anyway.
Maybe the first one right here is, right? I'm going to mess up my document here.
Spirit of love. Yeah.
Every,
there you go.
Right? That should be your first objective, right? Always approach it, right? And be the calm. Maybe the second one is be the calm in their storm, right? Let me just write that in.
What's fun is the spirit of love is also a strategy and it's also a tactic.
Yes. You know what? That's true. And maybe I should just put them down there too, right? Yeah. So we'll leave that there. But and then the strategy, you know, one of the things that I think has helped me is I give my strategy silly names, right? You know, the turkey Walmart strategy. That's a very specific strategy to me, and it has tactics. And you mentioned this, have an action plan. What am I going to do if my son comes to me and says, I'm depressed. I don't want to wake up tomorrow, right? Fight or flight, not effective in that moment.
Nope.
Hope and a prayer, as wonderful as that is, okay, not a tactic, right?
Yeah.
So write out your tactics and get these things. And I'll share this worksheet with whoever watches this video. I'll make sure they can grab this worksheet. I'm gonna unshare it now. But again, you talked about it. One of the most beautiful things I think having a kid on the spectrum taught me is I have to have a plan for a lot of different things that's very unique for him, right?
Yeah.
And I have to have tactics spelled out to a point where I can internalize those tactics. So when he does X, I know, okay, I've got winning every meltdown strategy. I'm going to, right? Boom, boom, boom. I know what to do first, second, third, fourth. Now what happens is I don't join the storm. I calm the storm, right? Because I go into a spirit of love, right? I don't join the storm. I become the calm, right? And those are two really powerful things. But again, the other thing that you said that I really appreciated is even me, we've all had these thoughts. I think you're right. Some kids think that I shouldn't have these thoughts or they're wrong or I shouldn't share them. Or for you to share with your own child that I've considered this too. It's normal. Right?
Yep. And
it's
we don't
weird.
Have to act on them.
You don't have to act on them. Right.
That's right.
So. You don't have to act on them. Right. And frankly, there's hundreds of thoughts we have that we don't act on that we shouldn't act on. Yeah.
And maybe a better way to say it. In fact, I'm going to add this to my flow chart because you work on worksheets. I work in flow charts.
There you go.
I think what I'll do is when I identify it and say, oh, and the way you act on it is important because you should talk to us. And right here, you might not need to talk to us when you're thinking about this, But if you think about this, yeah, that's you should get some help here. And this is how we can do it. And one other thing I love about your costs worksheet there, Kyle, is if you can come up with a universal, so the challenge for me would be, if I was writing it down, would be, I can't know beforehand what the issue is, and
Correct.
then have my long-term outcome be able to deal with the situation the right way eventually. And
Right.
then my strategy is to not overreact and not and to ex make sure I understand the consequences. And the tactics are all about, hey, this is how I'm going to ask these kids. So if my child comes to me, my daughter Elizabeth interviewed me recently and said, "What would you say if would you bail me out of jail?" And I was like, "No, I wouldn't bail you out of jail." And she was shocked, right? Because I'm the helpful dad. And it's like, well, why were you in jail? You know, there's so many things there. And then she asked what would happen. She was just trying to, you know, life questions. Well, what if I stole a lot of money from you? And I thought about it. I was like, well, I'd probably prosecute you and help you then deal with the consequences of being prosecuted. And it was so fun because I have this flow chart developed already, which so no matter what happens, immediately my mind shifts into, you know, actually it was another one of your techniques, the swoosh technique or whatever it is.
Yeah, swish.
I use blinking. So I change my state by a blink. So as soon as I feel panicked or emotional, I do a blink and I'm like, I reset back into my, and I use it for all sorts of things. But that allows me to help with whatever the situation is, no matter what the degree is for my kids, or now other parents who are coming to me and saying, "Oh my goodness, my kid is cutting themselves." Oh, blink, compassion, spirit of love, and then I can go into it and ask them more questions about how they're doing, where are they at, and then say, at some point, I've dealt with cutters, and I have some insight that may or may not help your situation, but I'd love to talk to you about it as you move forward. That's
And the cool
go
part about
ahead.
that is you can start with a framework for them and they can make the adjustments, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people say, I don't know what to do. And well, somebody's experienced what you're experiencing. Believe me.
Yep. Nothing's new under the sun.
Nothing's new under the sun. As a matter of fact, there might be a whole book, a whole section of books on your experience
Yeah.
at the library, right?
Really?
But you'd say, well, my situation is unique, and you're right. But you could start with a framework, which in my cost formula framework, I say, listen, challenge, objective, strategy, tactics, and then adjust, 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 right? But
Yep.
what's happening when you do that is now instead of saying, oh my gosh, I'm working on a hope and a prayer, God save them, and then maybe God doesn't, and you're mad at God, right? And that being your plan, now you say, okay, the next time this happens, I've got a series of steps I'm taking. I'm going to watch what happens. I'm going to see the results. I'm going to follow. I'm going to be very connected to this thing. And as I need to make adjustments for my unique, specific child or situation, I can do that, right? But at least I've got an action plan instead of sitting back and worrying and letting it, I know too many people sit back and they just worry. What if, right?
Yeah.
No, what if? If you feel like it's an issue, pull out the formula. What is the challenge? What is the long-term objective? Create some tactics, start applying those tactics, and now you have a plan in life, right? You're not just taking the world beating the crap out of you, which the world has beat the crap out of me, right? People say, how can you be so buoyant and happy? I say, because I got a plan. I got a plan for happiness. I got a plan for joy. And sure, I could sit back and the world could beat the crap out of me and I could be beaten and bruised. And by the way, that's what you see. There's no hiding the beating I've taken, right? But I don't have to live in a beaten world. I don't have to live in a beaten state, right? I got a plan. And I'm working my plan. And if my plan fails me, I'll create a new plan. I'll make adjustments. I'm always working at it, right? And it gives me strength. It gives me courage. It makes me feel like my prayers and my hope have a better chance, right? So, well, Cameron, we've talked about a lot. We're at an hour and 42 minutes here. Did you realize that?
Yeah,
Okay.
it doesn't surprise me.
What do you want to, if, what would you like to close on? I mean, I know you're working on a program that maybe you're ready to share, maybe you're not ready to share. I'm sure people, or I'm just gonna, what would you like to close with, Cameron?
Well, let me just start by saying how grateful I am to be able to talk and record this. As nervous as I was, I could have chosen to say, I don't feel well, because this is a hard subject.
Sure.
But I can't imagine talking about it in a recorded format with anyone, and have it be as likely to come off with the right spirit than you. So thank you for the invitation. I really do appreciate it. And we have a website. It's called Connect and Conquer, and I'm w we're we focus on helping other people overcome adversity, depression, and anxiety through connection with deity, others, and themselves. And we're putting out a lot of content. One of the ways to have connections with others is actually through gameplay and games. And so this all started with my son, who was he had a good 2 weeks. And I asked him, I was like, what is it you're doing that so that you're elevated? What's different? And he's like, well, I'm playing this game. And I asked him what the game was, and it was called Senior Assassin. And the concept was that you take a token, in their friend's case was dinosaurs, plastic little dinosaurs, and you touch the other person with your token and it assassinates them. And then you take their token and you go after their assignment. And I was like, well, why don't you do this more often? This sounds like it's fun and it's creative. And they did things like traps where they would hang the dinosaur from a fishing line above the door, and their assigned person would walk out and they would let it drop and it would hit them, and the person would be out, just
Right.
lots of fun. And they said, well, it's too hard to kind of figure out the round robin, and someone has to be in charge and make the assignments. And then sometimes someone won't play and they'll leave the geographic location. And so it's hard. And I was like, I could write an app for this. And so we started talking and decided on a concept that it's called Snapshot Capture. So you'll sign up for the game, and it's being programmed right now. We're paying for it out of pocket. Have a pretty good team actually working on it, and I'm really excited. It should be done by I think the beta version will come out first part of September. And the idea is that you'll enter a game code, and that puts you into a game with others, and then you have to get a selfie with them in the background, and that's how you capture them. You capture the selfie with them in the background, and then you would take on their assignment, and it's a way to interact in the real world in a kind of fun way to connect with others. And we have a bunch of different versions of the game that we're going to be developing over the next couple of years, but that one, we're hoping that it allows people to connect and then to conquer their anxiety and the depression and the adversity that they're going through. So
You
that's
said
kind of what we're going.
connect and conquer.com or okay.
Connectandconquer.com. So
Is it A and D?
yes, it is.
Okay. Connect and conquer.com. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. You guys that are watching, I know a lot of people are, I'm going to post this on my, Parenting at Home Autism Challenges in the Spirit of Love Facebook page, right? Which I haven't changed the name of yet, but I realized I need to. But, if you guys are, if you need help, reach out, right? That I really want, because you're not the first parent who has seen these kind of things, right? And don't be afraid to, don't, being fearful of something. And I have seen on occasions where kids can see the fear in their parents' eyes if they say these things and they use it as a tool. I've seen this a lot in the autism community. Kids will ramp up to get what they want. And this is behavior. We can call it whatever we want, but kids do what works. And if they say that they'll kill themselves and they get what they want, they keep doing it. And it may or may not be reality, right?
Right.
It may be, just be a tool, but it's not something to ignore, like you said, ever.
That's right.
Right? Open up the line of communication. Put yourself in the spirit of love. Open up the line of communication. Start asking a lot of questions. And be prepared for your kids to be resistant to this, especially if you've done things that may or may not be in the spirit of love. And we all have as parents, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the key to this whole thing, I think, is probably just number one, you said it at the very beginning, and it's morbid and it's harsh. But if someone is determined to do it, there's really not a lot you can do.
Yep.
You know, and if you do know what you can do, then tell us, tell everybody. The world needs to know.
Right.
But if you do get the inclinations or you have this fear, hope and prayer is not a plan. It's good. We recommend that highly. But maybe you pray for guidance on creating a plan, right? And sit down and write down how you're going to address this, and start with, do it in a spirit of love. Start to communicate, connect with your kids. Make sure they feel your love, and don't be critical when they share hard things with you. You've got to listen. You got to be the calm in their storm, right?
Yep.
And I know it's hard. Believe me, we've both faced this quite a bit, right? It takes practice to be the calm in the storm.
Oh, yeah.
But if you need help with that, I can help with that. Obviously, that's one of the things I do best, is help parents learn to calm themselves so that they can actually apply the strategies they want to apply. So, Cameron, man, I really appreciate you getting on the call with me. And I'm going to, once I stop the recording, you're going to stay for a minute or two here. But I appreciate you doing this. I know it's a touchy subject. I know there's people that can apply shame to it. There's people that can, right? And so we just need to put it out there. So I really appreciate you sharing your experiences. You know, I don't have the same experiences. It's interesting that I learned something about myself today, that I learned a lot more about how deep of the ideation I've gone into.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize. I like to think I'm not. I take pride in being very positive and motivated, but after talking to you, I realize that I've dived a little deeper into it than I would probably like to admit after Shelley passed away. And I think it's probably understandable. Again, not something to be ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
Just that it does happen, right?
Yep.
And I think that maybe that's the point of this whole thing, is to say, listen, this is not something we have to be afraid of. This is something we need to face and we need to address, and we don't need to be ashamed of it. And we need to make a plan, right? And get help and reach out. So hopefully this has been helpful for you guys. I think Cameron and I are such good friends. We were pretty relaxed in this thing. And if it seems like it's trivial in the way we handled it, it's not. But Cameron and I know each other so well.
Yep.
We love each other so much that we can talk so plainly about hard things, that it's a wonderful thing. So
agreed.
The other thing is too, if you don't have somebody like that, find somebody.
Yeah.
Right. Find somebody that you can have hard conversations with, that you know loves you, that will just have these conversations. And it's amazing how much you can learn from each other. And I know I have relied on Cameron for so much. I don't even think Cameron knows. And I think it's kind of been that way both ways, right?
Absolutely. It has been me relying on you. So,
yeah. So find somebody, look for somebody. If you need help from Cameron or I, reach out to me. I can tell you how to get in touch with us. We want to help. You know, that's kind of our, I know it's my purpose, is to help parents to parent at home autism challenges in the spirit of love. I know what it feels like to struggle. And I know what it feels like to be in a top 1% happy family. And It takes work, but you're going to work anyway.
That's right. Time's gonna pass. You're gonna have to do it. Hop up and hustle. You should link that anyway. That there we could talk another 7 hours.
But we won't. We're going to tie it up, Cameron.
All
Hey, thanks
right.
so much. Thanks so much for your time, Cameron. And I'm going to, again, you guys reach out to us if you need any help. We'd love to be helpful. I'm going to post this on YouTube. I'm going to give a copy to you to post wherever you want.
Great.
So, yeah. And I think I'm going to post it everywhere I can. And please share it if you know anybody that's struggling or needs help. And, hopefully it's been entertaining and educational. And you feel like you're better for it and maybe have a plan. So thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye, everybody.